What's up, everybody? Happy Friday. Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, the only daily NFL podcast on the entire planet. It's the only daily NFL podcast in my planet. I'm Will Brinson. I'm the host of this CBS Sports venture. We will talk to Pete Prisco and RJ White and get picks for every single game against the spread. We even have a moneyline underdog parlay. We have a two-team teaser, and then Pete did a four-team, six-point teaser that he's going to drop at the end of the show, so make sure and check that out. But first, we got to talk to the man, the myth, the legend, Bryant McFadden. What's up, man? How you doing?
What's up, Will? I'm doing pretty good.
Doing well. You know, our Thursday nights talking on the phone are coming to a close. I know you're sad about not staying up until midnight to watch the Jaguars and Titans play. We're going to get to that and talk some Steelers. If you're not subscribing to Bryant's podcast, it's The Season, the 2008 Steelers. You're a fool. You can check it out on iTunes. Each week, you've got somebody different from that team, and we'll get to that in a minute. But first, let's talk about Derrick Henry, because, man, we've been waiting for this since the moment he was drafted by the Titans in the second round and expecting this to happen. And he finally unleashed a franchise record 239 rushing yards with four touchdowns against the Jaguars in a slaughtering of Jacksonville. Unfortunately, I think like 1% of the people in the world were starting him in fantasy.
Yeah. Yeah. 1%. I think that's a very, very fair quote as far as number wise, percentage wise, but Derrick Henry had an historical day, night. He stiff armed his way to a 99 yard touchdown. He added three more rushing touchdowns to his historical night. And yet and still, he played pretty good. He played real good football, but the defensive effort, the lack thereof, especially tackling, was really put on notice last night for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And they clearly did not look ready to play. And that's the wrong mentality to have when you're playing against a 240, 50 pound running back.
Yeah. Did you get the sense? You know, it's interesting. I thought it was fascinating because 2 weeks ago, the Titans played the Texans and the Titans went for it on 4th-and-1 at the goal line, had a questionable play call, dove up the middle. It got stuffed. And then Lamar Miller turns around and goes 98 yards the other way. Same sort of thing. The Jaguars ran that stretch play to the left at the goal line, and it gets stuffed because the bad blocking up in the middle, and Leonard Fournette was mad about it. And then 99 yards from Derrick Henry, it felt like that run really snatched the Jaguars' soul. I mean, if you've been there as a defender where you see a play like that and you're like, well, this is it. I mean, like, it felt like the game wasn't over, but it sort of felt that way, right?
You know what? Deja vu, no question. I forgot about the sequence of plays you just hit on with the Texans going for it. I mean, the Titans going for it on 4th-and-short, didn't get it. Lamar Miller, touchdown in a matter of seconds. The same thing we saw last night. Me personally, with Jacksonville at that time, if I'm not mistaken, Will, they were down, 5 points? What, 7-2?
Yeah, 7-2. Yep.
And when recent history tells me, when these two teams play football, three points, they're like touchdowns. Mm. And I felt like if you can attempt the field goal, now you're only down 2 points. Your defense outside of that first drive, I mean, they made some good things. It was a huge screen play to Deion Lewis that allowed Tennessee to eventually score. Let's play defense. Let's play defense. And if you're going to go for it, that was a long 1 yard. I don't like the run. You know, you line up in a very generic goal line formation with your backup quarterback.
Three tight ends,
and none of the tight ends are pass catchers. You pretty much told Tennessee what you were getting ready to do, and they were prepared for it.
Yeah, you're right. And the thing is, too, they had gotten – so their first two drives were 6 plays, 15 yards, 3 plays, 6 yards. They looked terrible. They punt twice. Tennessee's defense was energized. You know, the Titans are up 7-0. The Jaguars punt that second time. And then the returner just completely botches it, ends up giving the Jaguars 2 free points. They take the ball back on that the free kick or whatever, and they go 14 plays, 65 yards, and come away with no points and a turnover on down, and then Derrick Henry the other way. That's a soul-sucking drive, and I think you're right. You know, you don't want – this doesn't need to be a shootout. You can get the points, take the 3, make it 7-5, and then force the Titans to go make a long drive or something like that. Because if you look at it, they really didn't. You know, they went, the next drive was 3 plays, 7 yards, nothing. Then 8 plays, 25 yards and a field goal. And so it was almost like the Jaguars allowed the Titans to just storm through the door with those long Derrick Henry runs. And I think by like the second one, the 54 yarder, they basically given up and stopped tackling, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They gave up. And this game was about big plays coming from the Tennessee Titans, especially from Derrick Henry offensively throwing the football. Marcus, granted, he did not need to have a huge game, but we know he's not the explosive type of quarterback that we've seen in the NFL. So that's why I felt like early in the ball game, when you just got a safety, if you can't get in three downs, let's kick a field goal and let's play quality football, because that play changed the momentum instantly in favor of the Tennessee Titans. When they got that fourth down stop, the stadium was rocking, and then here comes Derrick Henry, the running back with probably the best stiff arm in the game.
Yeah, man, he's smashing people in that run and across the whole thing. And I thought it was really interesting. He looked a lot quicker tonight too, you know, or last night, excuse me, Kai, you did, I messed up. You didn't mess up. He looked a lot quicker last night, kind of getting on the edge and really sprinting towards the end zone. Like he knew he was having that breakout game. Do you think, B-Mac, that the Jaguars should fire everybody? I mean, what do you think the Jaguars should do? Because they're 4-9 now. I mean, this is a disaster. They were one blown whistle away from the Super Bowl, and now they're 4-9, and they have to debate whether they should fire everyone.
You know what? I was going to ask you the same question. What's next for Jacksonville with this coaching staff?
You
Doug Marrone, he's in year two?
Yeah, second year. You know what Pete Prisco thinks is going to happen?
I would love to hear Pete. Basically, he's our Jaguars insider.
Yeah, he is. He's been covering that team since literally since before I was born. He's been covering football since before I was born, but not the Jaguars. He thinks that they're going to fire, that Coughlin's going to fire Marrone and come down to the sidelines and coach himself.
You know what? I don't see Coughlin doing that this year.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you fire Doug Marrone, you just, you know, elevate someone from his staff that's currently there to be the interim head coach, finish out the season.
Sorry. I meant in the offseason. He's going to fire Doug.
Okay.
He's going to fire Doug Marrone. He's not going to go full Barry Alvarez here. He's going to, try and take over next year.
Well, based on this performance, that could happen this week, right?
True.
I mean, no one saw this ugly performance last night from the Jacksonville Jaguars. If someone was to tell me the score would be 30-9, I would say it has to be the Jacksonville Jaguars potentially winning that way because of the defense. And then, of course, you know, getting Leonard Fournette back in the fold would be a huge plus for them. But this team didn't have any effort. They didn't play with any energy. They played like they didn't care. And for them to get blown out 30-9 just from runs, giving up runs, the effort is not there. So with that being said, what's next? How do you go get past this?
I don't know. I mean, I think here's the scary thing if you're the Jacksonville Jaguars, because, and I wrote about this, I'm trying to think who I was talking to. Jason Lockefort and I were talking about this like two weeks ago or so. So they have $21 million that they're due to Blake Bortles if he's on the roster, $16.5 million in dead cap space if he's not on the roster. They're probably going to cut him. Good luck trading him. If they trade him, they're going to have to send a second round pick and his contract and Blake to get rid of him. They're basically going to be like $23 million over the cap when the new year, you know, heading into the new league year. They're going to have to get rid of two of the three stud defensive linemen, whether it's Malik Jackson, Calais Campbell, or Marcell Dareus. They can cut those guys and free up a ton of cap space without too much of a hit. But they also they're going to have to extend Yannick Ngakoue, extend Miles Jack, extend Jalen Ramsey. They don't have a quarterback. I mean, Leonard Fournette takes up the fifth or sixth highest salary for any running back in the NFL. I mean, this is a team that was right there on the verge, and now all of a sudden they are just collapsing back inside of themselves. It's crazy. And so I think, I don't know who's enthralled about taking this job and working for Tom Coughlin when you know that he's looming like that, like Barry Alvarez. Like, he ain't afraid to come down for the press box and take over the job. I don't know what they do next.
Yeah. Yeah. Critical good points made by you, Will, as far as the money, as far as going forward with money still tied up in the quarterback, who clearly is not the guy. The defensive lineman will be a flux at that position, at that spot. I think you will see a new face in the starting lineup, and one of those high-priced guys will be gone. Is it safe to say the Jacksonville Jaguars missed their window of opportunity as far as competing for a championship?
I think you're right. I mean, and it was a really small window, wasn't it? It's like a screen door that like swung open with the breeze and then slammed right back shut, you know?
Yeah, but think about this, listeners and Will. The reason why I say I think they missed their window of opportunity was, a year ago, their defense was so good. They were very, very opportunistic. They were forcing turnovers, and they were scoring points for the offense. And even though Blake Bortles, he's not known to be a very, very consistent quarterback, he made timely plays throughout 2017. And outside of the known with the team, right, with the Jacksonville Jaguars, let's look at the things that were surrounding them, their neighbors. The Indianapolis Colts, no Andrew Luck. The Houston Texans eventually lost Deshaun Watson, right?
Yep.
And the Tennessee Titans, they were in a flux, eventually, you know, getting a new head coach. So within their division, they had an easy, easy win to win that division, an easy road to win that division. And then getting to the playoffs, we saw what happened. The first round, I mean, you played against the Buffalo Bills at home. Mm. Granted, it was a tough game, but that's a win. And you get to New England and things did not work in your favor. But now Andrew Luck is healthy, and boy, he's looking good. And barring anything happening going forward, it's safe to say if Andrew Luck is healthy, he is the starting quarterback. He is their franchise quarterback. That franchise won't slow down. And look what Tennessee Titans, I mean, the Houston Texans are doing. So now the division is tougher. They're making strides. They're getting better. They're improving. And Jacksonville Jaguars are going in the wrong direction. So I think they missed their window last year.
Yeah. No, and here's the thing too, like 2 points on that. One, Cody Kessler threw 43 passes. You are not going to win a football game if Cody Kessler has to throw the ball 43 times. I didn't think he was that bad, all things considered, but the offensive line, I mean, he was getting pressured left and right. The offensive line is a major problem. I think, Art Stapleton of the New Jersey Record pointed this out, but, the Jaguars' starting left side of their offensive line was the starting right side of the Giants' offensive line when the year started.
That's not good.
That's not good at all. And so, you know, they couldn't get pressure. They were getting pressured. Fournette couldn't get any room to run. They're not creative with how they run Fournette. So they might have to blow this whole thing up. The second point that I think is really devastating, and this is not hindsight, because I remember Prisco talked about this. Tom Coughlin liked Deshaun Watson coming into the 2017 draft, and they used the number 4 overall pick on Leonard Fournette. And it was great when they were running the ball really well, you know, again last year, and they're you know, playing great defense. But if they had Deshaun Watson and they drafted him, even if they played Bortles last year and used a, you know, whatever, third round pick on whoever you want, Kamara, you know, or second round pick, Kamara, Kareem Hunt. I mean, I know he's released, but you get the point. Like, they could have, they would have a guy in Deshaun Watson on a rookie contract, and they would be able to keep all these guys on defense and keep the window open and hope the defense bounce back. And instead, they're stuck spending all this money on a quarterback they're not going to have with no real solution. And they're just going to have to, I mean, blow this whole thing up. It's wild. We're really doing the Titans a disservice too. I was really impressed with what Tennessee did. It is easier to do, you know, to do. Marcus Mariota wasn't great. Derrick Henry ran all over the place. I thought the defense was outstanding. Tennessee's now 7-6, and they're not dead in the wild card spot. So it is worth noting on that. But let's talk about another team they might be competing with, the Pittsburgh Steelers. What, and by the way, I did like how Bryant, you, you were talking about the Jaguars playoff path and you like literally skipped over the game against the Steelers. You're like, that never happened in my mind. We went straight from Buffalo to New England. I know Sunday night was probably tough to watch because it looked like it's the first time in Steelers history that Pittsburgh has ever been up 14 points at home and lost it by halftime in the second half and lost a game. And it just,
I mean, they actually were up 16 at halftime.
Yeah. It was the biggest deficit they've ever given up. What happened and where do you think the Steelers heads at right now going to Oakland this week in sort of a must win game?
Well, my personal opinion about what happened this past Sunday night at home against the Chargers was a team in the Pittsburgh Steelers. They dominated on both sides of the ball in the first half. You go into halftime with a 16-point lead. You know Phillip Rivers and the Chargers, they're going to make a run. And with that being said, you have to shorten the ball game. And the best way to shorten the ball game with the lead is to do what? Run the football. This should be a James Conner half. Now, we know he eventually got hurt. But before the injury, he was not the vocal point offensively as far as game plan, as far as script going forward. James Conner was not the vocal point. They still relied on the arm of Big Ben. And I know Big Ben has been, you know, just dominating opposing defenses for the most part. But when you have a 16-point lead, you have to shorten the ball game and just feature James Conner. And also, too, not being able to run the football. Now you give Phillip Rivers and the Chargers an opportunity to get more possessions. And that's what I saw. And eventually, like I said, you know, when you talk about momentum is a very, very tricky thing. You can't see it, but you can feel it. And I don't care if you're at home in your living room. I don't care if you don't have any dog in the race as far as favorites that you're cheering for. You can feel when that momentum starts to shift and it's like a snowball effect. You can't stop it. And that's what we saw this past Sunday night. I mean, when that momentum shifted in favor of the Chargers, I mean, it was nothing Pittsburgh can do, especially, you know, they got that punt return. That really changed the dynamics of that ball game.
Yeah, it really did. And you don't see Mike Tomlin coach teams do that. And you do, one of the things though, I think has been a trait of this lately with Tomlin and Big Ben, for whatever reason, they don't play great on the road. What's your fear factor here for the Raiders for going to Oakland and being a big favorite? I mean, is there any chance that they slip up here knowing the importance of this game?
Yeah, I'm nervous. And I'm not just nervous because we will be without our starting running back, James Conner. Even if James Conner was healthy and prepared to go, I'm still nervous, and here's why. For whatever reason, listeners, I don't know what it is, but the Steelers, they do not play good in Oakland. And I don't care what Oakland record is, you know, what they've done throughout the course of the season. Anytime the Steelers travel out to the Coliseum, and I've been a part of a team that went out to the Coliseum and struggled against a very, very bad Oakland Raider team, we struggle. So I'm very, very nervous. And then when you add up, when you also add on, I'm sorry that James Conner is not playing. Now you have, Ridley, who is going to potentially be in the rotation. Jalen Samuels.
My man, Jalen Samuels, who's not a real true feature back, by the way.
Yeah. He's like a little do it all type of player. He's a Tariq Cohen, but not as fast, but a little more put together.
Yep.
You know, yeah. But yeah, when you look at Jalen Samuels and the veteran Steven Ridley will potentially get the opportunities in the backfield. I mean, we don't know exactly what to expect from this ground attack with Pittsburgh. So I'm nervous. I am nervous knowing the history with Pittsburgh traveling out to Oakland.
Yeah, I think that Oakland could keep it close. And Ben's never won in Oakland. I mean, they don't play there that often, but he's just never won in Oakland, which is kind of a interesting stat. I don't think Tomlin's ever won in Oakland either, which is surprising to see that.
Yeah.
I'd be nervous too. What's the story this week from the season with, Deshae Townsend talking about a game winning pick six off Tony Romo?
No question. Once again, another popping episode. If you guys haven't tuned in, please do iTunes, you know, search the season, Pittsburgh Steelers 2008 season, recapping that championship run that we had. This past week, we recapped the Dallas Cowboys victory. It was a five-star matchup because we're in it. The Pittsburgh Steelers in it. Tony Romo, and like Will just mentioned, gave you guys a quick snippet about what happened. Deshae Townsend, game-winning pick six. Heinz Field went crazy. And that was a real talented, good Dallas Cowboys team, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, Terrell Owens, Romo, they had what? Roy Williams.
Witten, legendary Witten. Broadcaster, Jason Witten.
Yeah. So, that team was well put together on both sides of the football, but you know, we were the better team on that Sunday.
Yeah. And that, that dropped them to, 8-5 and probably they finished 9-7 and probably ultimately sealed, their opportunity. Marion Barber, yeah, he was running pretty well for that team. By the way, if, just
the Shard Choice, you remember that name?
Yeah, that's right. They had Felix Jones too, yeah, out of Arkansas. That might have been his rookie year too. Good call. Did Shard Choice play at Georgia Tech? Am I right about that?
Yes, sir.
All right. There we go. He was a good little pass catching back, man. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you a pro tip. For the podcast search thing, I'm gonna tell everybody about this too. I just checked it out on iTunes, PMAC. If you go to iTunes, you can just search Steelers CBS. And it pops up. It's the first thing up there. And so people can subscribe. It's the season, the 2008 Steelers, going in great detail about it. If you're not listening to it, you are, acting the fool, as they say. PMAC, we'll talk next week, buddy.
Yes, sir.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's the butterfly effect for real.
All right, now it's time for some picks, what everybody's been waiting for. I have on the phone right now two guys who are so enthusiastic. You can't see them. I can. The enthusiasm is bubbling through the screen as we're recording this pick segment. Pete Prisco, this is the happiest I've heard you in the 30 years I've known you.
That happy already? Really? Jeez, I didn't realize I was that happy today.
I'm just kidding. It's Thursday as we're recording this. We're recording it for the Friday pick segment. RJ White also with us. RJ, how you doing?
Good. How you doing?
You guys sound like you're hitting like a wall here. What's going on? Hitting a wall. I feel like I'm hitting a wall too. So maybe, you know, it's fine. Does this always happen to you, Pete, late in the year? Hit that grind, that end of season grind?
Not usually, but this year it has.
Are they working you too hard, Pete?
No.
They're not? You can say that. Huh. They're not listening. Huh? Complain.
I can handle it, unlike some.
Ooh. Who's some?
They will remain nameless.
Are they, what do they do? What's their title?
On the mic hosting this podcast.
What, you think I can't handle it? What are you talking about? I'm the only one with any energy around here. Get out of here. Yeah, I would love to see what happened if they made you host a daily podcast, Pete.
I did a radio show for 5 years, for 7 years, every afternoon for 3 hours. Try it.
Sure, I'll try it. Anyway, this is terrible. This is terrible radio. So let's dive into the intro and recap that RJ put together, or the rundown, as I like to call it. By the way, you can follow Pete on Twitter at Prisco CBS. You can follow RJ at RJ White 1. Get RJ's picks on sportsline.com. $1 for your first month if you use it. The promo code White. RJ, starting to get a little warm here, I believe, on this picks, right?
Oh, yeah.
Are you all right?
Yeah, I want to say I'm something about 70% in my last 42 picks or so on Sportsline, so doing pretty good.
Wow. All right.
Nice.
70% will cash. are you actually kind of hot in the Super Contest too? You have taken the lead going 4-1 in week 13. This is RJ's time to shine. Do you still think you have hope?
He had the lead.
Oh, you had the lead. You've had the lead. Okay. Now it's just about Pete, 3-2. Hop Nick Kostos, who's now down with 1-4, is down to 32 points. I went 2-3. I'm still trailing Nick by 1.5 points. The goal here, guys, and by the way, Nick, is passively aggressively, he's mad about me not scheduling to get him on this podcast for today. That's okay. We're going to get Nick on next week with the three of us and Nick, and we're going to make picks. It's going to be a lot of fun. He's like, I have plans when I asked him if he wanted to come on today. So I don't know. He's at 32 points. Maybe we'll have all passed him by next week. As far as podcast picks go, RJ plus 10 after going 10-5 in week 3. Pete, 0 points. That's actually not terrible in life when you go 7-8. And I went -7 despite having the same record as Pete. For those just joining us on this, what we do is we have assigned point values to all the games each week. Of course, we exclude the Thursday night game. Then we have 4 points for one game. And then you can assign whatever you want, 3, 2, and 1 to all the rest of the games. And we break them down into multiple segments. The first segment is if you could only play one, and that's our best bets. I will start off by saying that my best bet this week, and you guys don't disagree with it, I got Baltimore plus 6.5 at the Kansas City Chiefs. It is scary to get in the way of Kansas City this season as they've been a spread covering machine. But I tend to think, RJ, that when you can take a team that's been covering the spread all year long and sort of start to fade them later in the season, the public's still going to be on them, get a little bit of value there. Additionally, I think that the Chiefs without Kareem Hunt are a substantially worse offense, and they don't stop anybody against the run. They're probably the worst team against the run in the NFL. I believe they're 32nd in DVOA in terms of rush defense. The Ravens over the past few weeks, since putting Lamar Jackson and Gus Edwards in there as the starting duo at quarterback and running back, have really excelled at running the ball. The Ravens are running the ball better than they have all season long, maybe better than they have in like 5 years, and I think that they'll be able to run and control the clock and keep this close. I don't think the Lamar Jackson experiment is going to work forever this season doing this read option and run stuff, but I think it's going to work this week. I actually like the Ravens to win the game.
I think it's possible. The Baltimore offense has rolled more than 200 rush yards in 3 straight, and that's obviously coincided with Lamar Jackson taking hold of the offense. So they can do it. You said Kansas City's defense was 32nd in rush DVOA. They're 31st in yards per carry. They don't stop anybody running the ball, and now you're getting the best running offense right now, if you look just a snapshot at this point in time. You said Kansas City's been a covering machine. They opened the year 7-0 against the spread. They're 1-3-1 against the spread since. So they got to that point of being overvalued. People were just banging on them to cover whatever the number was. That's not happened at this point. On the other side of the ball, you got a battle of a great D versus a great offense. We know what Kansas City can do, but Baltimore is number one in points per drive, number one in net yards per attempt. They're top five against the rush in the pass in DVOA. So if there is a defense capable of slowing down Kansas City, it might be this one. Then you look at what Kansas City has coming up. The next game is Thursday. They have to play the Chargers. That's the game for the division. So you can get caught looking ahead a little bit, saying we don't need this Baltimore game, but we definitely need this Chargers game. So I think it is possible that Baltimore pulls off the upset. They need some things to break right for them. I think 6.5 is way too much. My power rating line would probably make it a little more just on the relative strengths of the team, but this is an awful spot for Kansas City and an awful matchup.
Yeah, I like the Ravens. This is one of those games where the blitz is going to get after Mahomes. And if there's one thing I think in watching him, the kryptonite of him, as little as there is him getting blitzed. And I think the Ravens, who are known for their blitz, are going to get after him. For me, this is actually, I think this is going to be a competitive game, even with Lamar Jackson in the game. I just think that the Chiefs defense is bad. They'll run the ball. And I think they're going to get after Mahomes. It's not going to be the high flying act it's been so far. I think the Ravens will slow him down.
What do you think about Tampa Bay? So we're all in agreement there, by the way, on Baltimore. We like the Ravens getting the points. If it gets to 7, you love them. I don't think that'll happen. Another big spread, albeit one for a home team, Pete, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, plus 8 at home. That's your best bet this week, right?
I like the Bucs this week. And the reason I like the Bucs this week is I think their offense has, you know, obviously been very, very good. The Saints are playing consecutive road games, which is always tough to do. And I know they've been rested a little bit because they had a little more time. But when I look at this team, I see issues, particularly that were exposed a little bit in Dallas last week, the ability to separate outside. Now, Tampa Bay's defense isn't great. They're not like the Cowboys. But I think the Bucs are going to score points here. They scored a bunch on them in the first first meeting, obviously, that was a way long time ago and a different quarterback. But Winston's playing well. I'll take the points here at home.
Not great is a little bit of an understatement. They're pretty bad. And I know they've come off a good game against some poor competition, but I think Bree's going to pick apart that Tampa secondary. Tampa secondary against a good quarterback, I don't think you can trust them at all. I can't see James.
So Cam Newton's not good then, right?
He wasn't in that game.
He's not good right now. He's hurt.
Carolina on the road isn't a good team overall. Yep. Just at that point. So I they're a much different team at home when the running game's working. And I think they've scored no more than 24 points on the road at all this year. Tampa's not turning it over, but they need the pass game to be like completely on point to have a shot going up against this New Orleans offense. New Orleans defense has been locked down, 51 points over the last four combined. So I think that they can hold Tampa down a little bit. It's a revenge spot for New Orleans. The first game of the season, they lost at home against Tampa. They're not going to be sleepwalking into this game like maybe Kansas City would in the last game we talked about. They want to get this win and prove that they can beat Tampa. I hate laying a ton of points on the road. I think New Orleans is going to be focused coming off a loss. They won 10 straight, and then they lose a game. I like a team in that spot coming back the next week to be 100% focused, knowing they need to go out and have a good game. The weather should be windy and rainy. If it wasn't for that, I'd probably like New Orleans a little bit more because that would be more conducive to scoring points. But even so, I think New Orleans defense is capable of keeping Tampa's offense pretty much at bay and winning a game by 10 to 14 points.
I'm of the opinion that sometimes it's just a bad spot to like. People don't like playing in certain spots. I don't think Cam Newton likes to play in Tampa Bay, and you know who else doesn't like to play in Tampa Bay? Drew Brees. The Saints, do you know the last time that the Saints won by more than 7 points in Tampa Bay?
No.
2010. They go there every year. They lost straight up the last 2 years in Tampa Bay. Now, one was 12-31 last year. I can't exactly remember if they were playing all of their starters, but they typically go to Tampa Bay in December, and for whatever reason, they beat them by 7 in 2012. They beat them by 7 in 2015, and every other game has been, every game has been one score since 2011. I don't know how much you want to get into it with a trend like that. And they played everybody last year, by the way. It's still
I think this is probably the best Saints team of that streak, though.
I wouldn't
the way the defense
that.
Is playing right now, I would take this version of the Saints over all those teams.
But if it's crappy weather, I don't know. I think eight is too much here for me. I would personally agree with that. I also agree with your pick of Indianapolis, RJ, your best bet of the week, the Colts catching 5 at the Houston Texans.
Yeah, Andrew Luck carved up Houston in that first meeting. It went to overtime. It should have been a tie game. The Colts went for the win, and the standings will be a little bit different if they'd have just accepted the tie. You know, maybe they have a better chance of winning the division at this point. But since that game, Houston has faced these quarterbacks: Dak Prescott, Josh Allen, and then Nathan Peterman because Allen got hurt, Blake Bortles, and then Cody Kessler. They used two in that game too. Brock Osweiler, Case Keenum, Alex Smith, who gets hurt, and then Colt McCoy comes in. Marcus Mariota, Baker Mayfield. I mean, that's not anybody near Andrew Luck's level of talent. Texans have 200 passing yards just once in the last 7. They've been able to get by with running the ball, playing good defense, and winning games like that. That's not going to cut it in this matchup against Andrew Luck. Coming off a game getting shut out, angry, knowing that they need to get back in this race, I think they're going to be at their top of the level offensively. And they've improved, and the defense has improved versus the pass since the bye. The rush DVOA on defense is number 4 on the year. So the line says the Texans are the much better team. I think they might be even. I think on a neutral field, you might make it a pick at this point. Indy coming off getting embarrassed. I like their motivation factor. And 5 points is too many. I think we're getting great value right here.
I don't love the game, to be honest with you, but if I had to play it, I'd play the Texans. I just think back-to-back road games, they weren't good last week against Jacksonville. The Texans' pressure will get after them in this one as well. They can pressure the quarterback better than Jacksonville can. They can't cover as well, but they can pressure as well. And I think Watson's going to be able to make some plays against them in the passing game. So I would lean to the Texans, don't love it.
Since we're talking about road spots that teams like or dislike to play in, I think it's worth noting that the Colts, for whatever reason, are very good when they go to Houston and play the Texans. They've only lost once since 2012. They actually lost in Andrew Luck's rookie year late in the season. They lost in 2016 in overtime by 3 points. But generally speaking, have kept this to be a one-score game. And I think the Colts are the more desperate team. Everybody's sort of riding the Texans high here. And I don't know. Like I think it should be a 3-point game, and I think you're getting 2 points of value, as RJ mentioned there. So I also would lean towards the Houston.
What was the Houston-Cleveland line? 5.5?
Yeah, 5.5.
And we're getting 5 here with Indy. Indy and Cleveland are about the same team. Of course not. No. Like Indy's a much better team than Cleveland.
And, I mean, don't you think even if Cleveland's
how'd that score end out? Cleveland.
That was a terrible pick by me.
Yeah, it was a bad spot for Cleveland too. Yeah, but still, like just comparative level of teams, Vegas is saying that Indy and Cleveland are about even. That's what the market is saying right now.
Well, but like if Indy and Cleveland played on a neutral field, I feel like the Colts would be favored by 3. Right?
On neutral field, yeah.
Right, that's what I'm saying. And so like there shouldn't be a half a point difference.
Right, you're getting value. And the look ahead line was in the Houston Indy game was Houston -3. Indy gets embarrassed. It goes up to 4.5, and now it's 5 because it's getting bet up because people remember Indy getting shut out. Indy's not going to get shut out in this game. You know, that was a once-in-a-season thing for them. So if you think that the offense that scored eight straight games, 3 passing touchdowns, if that's the actual Indy offense, then you should take Indy. If the actual Indy offense is the one that can go and get shut out on the road, then stay away from it. But I'm making that it's the former.
I'm with you on that one. Segment 2. Any other thoughts on those best bets? I didn't feel like we didn't linger long on them. Segment number, Pete, do you want to keep going? Do you want to keep talking about best bets? I know you like to talk, Pete.
Well, I'm fine. Let's go.
Segment 2, agree to disagree. We have just 4 games in here where there's a strong disagreement. That means that we each have at least a 2-point game. The first one, RJ and Pete are both on the New York Football Giants at the Washington Redskins. RJ, tell me why you're backing Eli Manning for the 15th time this season.
Tell me why you're backing Mark Sanchez.
Butt fumbles.
So you think that's positive?
I don't know. It's too many. I think that Washington will muck this up and turn this into a slop fest like they did against the Eagles. And that I understand it on paper. It makes no sense that you would back the Redskins. They do have at least a full week to prepare, almost a full week to prepare with Sanchez. And, I think they turn it into a slop fest and just keep it close.
Yeah.
Do you think the Redskins would have covered if, they didn't?
Yeah. If Cole McCoy plays 60 minutes and he doesn't get hurt, then the Redskins cover.
I disagree.
Yeah, the Washington injuries are just too much. You know, 16 players on injured reserve. So you're going to third string quarterback. We talked about Sanchez. You got third string guards at both guard positions. It's a short week. Mark Sanchez won't be up to speed with the playbook. You know, they brought him in 2 weeks prior to the game where he had to appear. He didn't look great. You know, now he gets an extra 6 days to prepare. He's not going to look much better. The Giants are playing hard. They won 3 of their last 4 games, and the one loss was a close loss at Philly that they were in. They're just 4-8, but they're playing like a 6-6 team. They have an even yards per play differential, so they give up as many yards per play as they gain. They're 0.1 weighted DVOA, so that's right in the middle of the pack. The defense is below average, but I don't see how Washington scores a ton with that offense and all those injuries. So if the Giants offense gets even to, 17-20, and I think that's realistic in this game, I don't know that Washington covers because that offense is just going to look pathetic in this game.
I mean, I don't have a good reason for it. Okay. Like I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I have a great sense of confidence that the Washington Redskins are going to win this game or that they're going to even cover this game given their injuries and given that they are trotting out, Mark Sanchez. But the line is just funky. Like it's just funky, right? I mean, I feel like it's.
Well, it's where it should be. Like I think it
is. It?
The look ahead was Washington -2.5 before Colt McCoy gets hurt.
I mean, Colt McCoy is that good?
Now it's 3.5. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem like Colt McCoy should be worth that points, but I think it's really the drop off to Mark Sanchez. That's the one that's worth the points.
I'm with RJ on this one. I can't, there's no way I could take the Redskins with that slop that they're going to put on the field. No chance. Zero. None.
Pete, I think Giants 3.5, you're still getting value.
Giants are playing pretty good football. And granted, they haven't exactly beaten up on a bunch of really good teams, but they play good football.
Pete, let me ask you something, and I don't want to turn this into like a 10-minute conversation, but you know what I'm going to ask you. Should the Redskins at least try out Colin Kaepernick?
Yeah, why not?
I mean, that's what I don't get about this whole thing. Like, I don't know if Colin Kaepernick's going to come in and be good, but the idea that we can't change up our offense now. We can't bring in Colin Kaepernick. It's like, you just brought in Mark Sanchez. What's the difference here? I don't understand what the problem is. Bring in Colin Kaepernick. Try
you know
it
what
out.
I don't like, though? I don't like every time somebody gets signed, it's like the Twitter police sounds the siren and bashes the hell out of the guy who gets signed.
I agree.
Look, Kaepernick should be in the league. We all agree on that. But he's not, so it doesn't mean you bash every guy that gets signed. Because he's not.
it'd be different if we had any evidence whatsoever of Colin Kaepernick taking over a Alex Smith team and having success. You know, I can't think of one situation where that's come up in recent history.
But we also have some evidence of Blaine Gabbert taking over for Colin Kaepernick team at one point too. So, I mean, we can go both ways on that.
Okay. If Colin Kaepernick gets signed, I'd be fine with Gabbert being his backup. I agree with you there.
That's not what I said. He took his job from him.
Here's my problem is that NFL teams consistently, almost without failure, will do anything in order to win football games, and the Redskins won't even give Colin Kaepernick a tryout. Like, maybe you bring him in and he's like, eh, whatever, like Josh Jackson gives us just as good a chance, that's fine. I mean, like, that's okay. Bring him in, give him a shot. But it's clear that there is something other than football motivating the Redskins when it comes to their quarterback signings and decision making.
But the guy hasn't played in 2 years either.
They signed Josh Jackson. Well, Josh Johnson.
I
mean,
would I have signed them? Yes.
Jackson is so bad that his name is actually Josh Johnson.
Yes, Josh Johnson. Excuse me. They signed Josh Johnson, who I don't believe has thrown a pass since
at least 2013. I think maybe 2011.
He's terrible.
Yeah, it's insane. It's like it's almost like taunting. They should be flagged for taunting for signing Josh Johnson, whose last attempted pass was 2011. That cannot be right.
Yeah, I think that might be right.
He hadn't thrown a pass since 2011. Colin Kaepernick, that the year Colin Kaepernick was drafted? Get out of here, Redskins. Screw you, Redskins. In fact, screw you right in the everywhere.
On the alarm, the Twitter police is
no, no. This is the Princeton took the over of the Redskins, and the Redskins win the NFC police, and I'm mad about it because they're going to cost me money because of the refusal to sign Colin Kaepernick. Screw you, Redskins. All right, that's all I got. Dallas -3.5 against Philadelphia. RJ, I'm just on the wrong side of you guys apparently on these NFC teams. Why you got Philly?
I'm surprised this line isn't higher. They had that high-profile win against the Saints, who everybody agreed was the number one team. Philly's traveling after a short week. We just said that we're not sure they would have covered if Colt McCoy didn't get hurt. So obviously you can't count on quarterback injuries in a game. It wasn't an impressive win against Sanchez. They ran away with it at the end. The D is average at best. They're 29th in yards per carry. Still banged up against the pass, you know, with that secondary. I think Tyron Smith is coming back for this game. He missed the last game. That slows up the Eagles pass rush. Zeke's going to have a big game against this bad Eagles D. Dallas D is going to rise up again, against an overrated offense that isn't playing that well. Ertz had 14 catches, 145 yards and 2 touchdowns against Dallas at home, and they still lost by 7. He's not going to give you any more than that. And I don't know where the production is going to come from the Eagles to keep this game close in Dallas. So, this was a pretty easy pick for me. The way Dallas is playing now, 3.5 just seems like way too low.
I'll take the Cowboys. I love the Cowboys last week. I told you guys that was the pick, one of my picks of the week. I love Dallas to win that game outright. And I think defensively they're really good and they can do a lot of things. Here's what the Eagles can't do. Run. And when you can't run and you play that defense, you got problems. And I think that's going to show up in a big way. I'm not talking about running game. I'm talking about speed outside. I think they're going to be able to lock them down. I think the Cowboys defense playing well. I love the Cowboys.
And Jeffrey just isn't playing good. Like Brad Jeffrey, I think has had, as a guy that has him on multiple fantasy teams.
I dropped him in the league.
Yeah, he's not
speak about good. A guy who can't run.
Yeah. By the way, Pete, you tooted your horn there. I want to toot your, I don't, well, I'm going to, let me, I don't want to phrase it like that. I want to toot your horn, Pete. But I do want to give you credit because you said on the Sportsline show, which, by the way, airs on CBS Sports HQ, cbssports.com/live, every day, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, Saturdays. You're going to be this is bowl season, baby. You got to be on Sportsline. This is the playoffs, bowl season. This is the time to be checking out Sportsline. And Pete said last Thursday night on Sportsline before the Cowboys-Saints game, the Cowboys were going to cover and that the Cowboys were going to win outright, and he dared people to splash a little bit on the money line, and man, were you right. So good job by you, Pete.
And once in a while, I get one right.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think there's both these picks are too obvious. And maybe that'll burn me. I think it's too obvious that the Cowboys are just going to keep rolling and take care of Philadelphia and that the Giants are going to stroll in and beat Washington. And maybe it is. Maybe I'm overthinking it.
You're overthinking it.
It's December. It's obvious season.
Yeah. It's obvious season. You're overthinking it.
Is December obvious season?
Mm-hmm.
It is.
It is?
This is when we start seeing teams quit.
Yeah, you're obviously going to be on the road for about 5 days around December 25th to December 29th. That's obvious.
See, I'll be on the road the 22nd and the 23rd and the 24th and the 25th and the 26th and the 27th. It is obvious. I will be on the road for
God,
5 days.
That is hell.
Yeah, it's hell. Yes, it is hell. It's absolutely
make sure, hell. Make sure to follow the North Star. You'll get there eventually.
I follow the North Star, the West Star, the East Star, the South Star. I got to follow all the stars. So look, I think it's a good coaching matchup here. I think Doug Peterson can outcoach Jason Garrett. I think the Eagles can. Fletcher Cox is playing really well. I think he can get in there and sort of slow down Zeke Elliott. He's got to slow down Zeke. If they can slow down Zeke, they can make some things happen. I don't know. I don't feel good about either one of them. I probably put them too high on here, but I'm taking both of those teams. Green Bay, it's a compelling argument, wasn't it? Green Bay -5.5 against Atlanta. I love Green Bay in this spot. Man, I love Green Bay in this spot. Julio Jones is banged up, sore foot, expected. He's practicing on Thursday, expected to play per Dan Quinn. Should be out there, but he's going to be banged up. Aaron Rodgers, I don't know if you guys heard, fired his own head coach. Took wow. Mike McCarthy out behind Lambeau Field and shot him in the head. Boom! It's over. You got godfathered. That's a metaphor. That's not.
Yeah,
that's
that was
not,
a little too graphic.
Yeah, that was a little too graphic. I apologize for that. That was too much. Anyway, Aaron Rodgers and Packers and Mike McCarthy have parted ways. I love a dead cat bounce, and there's no more dead cat than Joe Philbin. The guy is the king of the dead cat, and he is going to come in. He's cleaning house. Got Winston Moss out of there. I said, no, don't tweet about my team. Get out of here. He's cleaning house. This is going to be 26 degrees, high of 26 on Sunday in Green Bay, low of 13 degrees. That is not Matt Ryan weather, Pete. And I like the Green Bay Packers to have a great offensive performance. Aaron Rodgers looks sloppy as Brady Quinn, Jason LaCanfora alluded to this week. Borderline purposely sloppy. And I think he comes out there, he looks sharp and has a great offensive day.
I like the Falcons plus the points. I think both teams are going to go up and down the field. I really like the over. I think this is going to be a high-scoring game no matter what the weather is. The Packers aren't good on defense. The Falcons are terrible on defense. I think Matt Ryan will play well. I think they'll throw up and down the field on Green Bay. And, you know, Rodgers is going to try and show up his old coach. He's going to throw it as well. So I like the over a lot, but I like the Falcons in the game.
Atlanta, as a team in their history, 1-8 straight up at 25 degrees or less. And this game is projected to be 20 to 25 degrees. I think they could play hard for a quarter. I think Atlanta could play hard for a half. I think when you get into the second half and the cold is in their bones and they're 4-8 and this win doesn't matter at all to their season, I don't see them playing hard in the second half. I think Packers run it all down over them in the second half. They take a halftime lead that might be 6-7 points, and they extend it. It turns into a blowout, and it becomes a pretty easy cover for the Packers.
Chicago +3 against the Rams at home Sunday night football. Man, this is a great game. Offense meets defense, and the Bears are getting points. Please, Mitchell Trubisky's going to be back in this game. I get that the Rams defense is getting better and improving, and Aaron Donald is a force to be reckoned with. But give me the Bears and the points in this spot, Pete.
You love the Bears, huh?
Love the Bears.
Not me. I think, when you look at them offensively, they can't run the ball, right? They have problems running the ball. Now, they ran the ball a little bit last week, but they have problems running the ball. I think that's going to show up. The other thing here, when you look at the Rams, I think Rams are going to get Gurley taken away from them. So you know what that's going to do? That means it's going to be a Jared Goff game. And I know that everybody's going to point to the weather and that it's coldest game he's played. Da, 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 da. The Rams will score points provided, and I don't know what the weather's going to be yet, but provided it's not a hurricane wind, I think they will score points. I like the Rams.
You say the Bears aren't running the ball well, but getting Trubisky back is going to help that. He has 363 yards on the ground, 3 rushing touchdowns. I think they really missed something when they go to Chase Daniel. And getting Trubisky back, as weird as it sounds, is going to improve the run game. Having to defend that more often than you would with Daniel. So I do think the Bears are going to have a lot more success offensively against the Rams. Rams are just 2 covers since week 3 against the spread. Last week's was at the last minute. You know, that easily could have went either way. Chicago sees #1 against the run in the pass per DVOA. Rams offense is #4 versus passing and #1 rushing. So we're getting strength versus strength there. When you flip it around the other side, I think the Bears can have success offensively against a Rams defense that just isn't playing well. You get the game in Chicago. It'll be colder weather for an LA team. Chicago only has 1 home loss. And in that game, they outgained the Patriots 453 yards to 381. So it's not like they got blown out by a really good New England team either. I think this game in Chicago should be a pick 'em. So we're getting 3 points of value. So I love the Bears as well. I don't think this line would be 9 in Los Angeles because the Bears are a good team. So the line doesn't make sense to me in that sense. So I think the value here is all with the Bears.
Yeah, I will point out that the Rams have 2 games since Sean McVay took over, 4 games since Jared Goff showed up, 2 games since Sean McVay took over where they've been in a temperature where it's under 40 degrees, and they have won both of those games. They beat the Titans in Tennessee 27-23 in week 16 of 2017. And then earlier this year in week 6, they went to Denver and won by 3 points. So it's, but you look at the totals, right? 27 points last year and 23 points this year. I don't think they're going to go into Chicago and lob up 35 or 40 points on this Bears defense, which is the best in football in a really cold game.
And the Bears defense is going to be pretty mad too, because they just gave up 30 against the Giants at, you know, in that game. I know they were on the road, but they were huge favorites. They were expected to win and took a big blow in that game. So the defense is going to come into this game like at the top of their game. You know, they're focused. They should be ready to go in this one.
It's obvious season, Pete. Bears are obviously going to win this game outright.
I disagree.
Okay. All right. Cool. Money, the line is moving towards, by the way, if you're listening to this and you want to bet on the Bears, go ahead and do it. It's opened up at 4.5. It's now like +3 and the Bears are juiced. So you're probably going to end up seeing 2.5. I mean, clearly don't like it as much, RJ, at 2.5, right?
Right. And it'll move once we know Trubisky's playing for sure. Like once that Friday injury report comes out and he's not questionable, you know, he's just ready to go, then it's going to go down. People are not going to have to worry about Chase Daniel.
It's like waiting to move, basically.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, moving right along. These are the, Pete, these are our whatever segments.
Whatever.
That's not even piped in. That's Pete live. I love it. Pittsburgh -10.5 at Oakland. Pete, you've got the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Look, I ain't taking the Oakland Raiders against Alabama these days. The way they can't play. Now, look, they showed up a little bit last week.
But yeah, should have took them against the Chiefs.
They can't play. Yeah, but that was, come on, you saw that game. It should have been a lot worse. But
they
can't play defense. They're terrible in defense. The Steelers are reeling because of what happened the other night, blowing that lead. By the way, Pittsburgh, you throw to score, you run to win. Why didn't you run the ball when you had the damn lead? That was really dumb on their part, okay? They gave away that game. They're not going to do it here. They're going to go out there. Roethlisberger is going to put up a big number early, throw the football around. And I just don't think that the Raiders can stop him in his offense. You know, unless they get, you know, all those good defensive players, Ted Hendricks and gang back from the old Steelers Raiders wars, it ain't happening.
Look, I'm not going to sit here and defend Oakland as being like a good team. Like they're a terrible team, but it's a tough road trip for Pittsburgh off 2 straight losses. They haven't won by more than 7 on the road this year. They're 1-8 against the spread since 2009 as 10-point road favorites or higher. So you make them huge favorites in a game and then they play down to the competition. And that's what they're going to do here. I also don't want to put the game in Ben Roethlisberger's hands because the more he throws, you know, the more susceptible he is to making mistakes. He's not as good a quarterback in 2018 as he was, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. The running game could lag with no Connor. I don't think you have a bell cow back between Ridley or Samuels. Oakland D somehow ranks number 1 in DVOA against number 1 receivers and number 4 against number 2 receivers. I think Aaron Schatz pointed that out on Twitter this week, which is insane to me. But if those numbers hold out and the outside corners do a good job, then maybe Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster don't go off as much as we expect. And Ben's going to have to rely a little bit more on moving the ball with Vance McDonald and passing to Samuels and, you know, the secondary James Washington. And I don't think that offense is explosive in that way. So this game could be a little tighter than we expect. It seems like one of those Pittsburgh should score 40 and they end up scoring like 24 and they win by 7 instead of 14 or 17. So I'm not strong on Oakland. Will and I both have him as a 1 and Pete has Pittsburgh as a 2. So I don't have any confidence in this, but this just seems like a lot of points for Pittsburgh on the road.
They are the number 1 team in DVOA against number 1 wide receivers. Number 4 against number 2 wide receivers. How on earth is that possible?
That's what I said when I saw those numbers. I was like, okay.
It's like, sure.
That, take your word for it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that makes sense. But they're number 30.
Not watching much of it then, just going through the data.
Maybe. 51. Like 50,
Yeah, it's like, what, 55 yards per game against number one receiver or something? Yeah. Like, that's, you know, a number one receiver is supposed to be at 80, 90, you know, teasing with 100, and they're giving up 55 yards per game. They must be playing some really bad number one receivers.
Yeah, or they just constantly get run on. I mean, I don't know. It's very bizarre. Oakland, by the way, getting 51% of the money, 51% of the bets, 81% of the money. So that's a pretty big, I believe that's the highest, second highest disparity on the board this week, according to the Action Network. Moving along to the next game, San Francisco 49ers at home against Denver. I got San Francisco as a two here. It's an aggressive two. Nick Mullins has not been very good since that incredible debut against that bad Oakland Raiders defense. He has fallen back to earth very quickly, but I do like what we're seeing from some of the younger guys in San Francisco. You got Dante Pettis playing really well, 215 yards and over 14 targets in his last two games, along with three touchdowns. You have George Kittle, of course, has been playing great. Justin Wilson was actually a target hog out of the running game last week.
Justin Wilson is so good that his name's actually Jeff Wilson.
Is it Jeff Wilson? I would think
you're butchered.
I think I called him Justin Wilson like 90 times in the last 48 hours.
You've mashed him up with Justin Jackson. The other
is it Jeff one. Wilson? How did I think it was Justin?
Jeff Wilson, Justin Jackson, Justin. Jalen Samuels.
Wasn't Justin Wilson the Cajun cooker back in the day?
That's what I'm doing. I'm mashing up Justin Jackson and Jeff Wilson. Okay. Well, at least I've got like a decent reason for doing it. I think that Denver is going to be really deflated in this game. They lost Emmanuel Sanders for the season. Chris Harris, they lost last week. They're the top 10 team by DVOA on offense and defense, and they could have made a playoff run, could still make a playoff run, but they're just too young, and I just don't think they get it done here. They need to pass to win, and I'm not sure they have the weapons to do that against Denver, Pete.
Look, Chris Harris being out is a big blow for them, obviously. But for me, I just think that they're going to run the ball and run the ball and run the ball. And if you look at the numbers of Case Keenum, they've come down as they've been winning. And that's because they're running the football, and I think they're going to turn their pass rushers loose. I think the Broncos are the team to be here. I think they'll win the game and cover the number.
Run the ball, run the ball, run the ball, I think, is a formula maybe for a win, but for a closer win. You know, I don't think it's going to be a blowout on the road when you're running the ball. You don't really have much of a passing offense. The passing game now runs through Courtland Sutton, Deshaun Hamilton, something named Tim Patrick, and Matt Lacoste. So good luck. You know,
Von Miller will have a little something to say with a couple sacks.
Von Miller is a great pass-catching tight end. You're correct.
You know what I'm talking about, RJ.
Yeah, he should get some sacks. Nick Mullins was better at home than on the road. You know, they had to go on the road the last two games, and the shine has come off of Nick Mullins. I think we're going to see a better quarterback at home where there's not as much going on. There's not as much crowd noise. You know, you got more favorable conditions. I think even with Jeff Wilson at running back instead of Breida, that San Fran's going to have some success running the ball. You know, that they're a good run offense team. And I think these teams should both do well running the ball, have a little bit closer game, lower scoring. That Denver might take away by three or four and a half is just a little bit too much for me. So I made San Fran a one for me for my picks.
Yeah, I mean it's hard to love that game, but the Broncos are banged up. They're going to be pained. Miami plus 7.5 against New England in the Humidity Bowl. Pete, you got Miami's a three here.
Look, New England's history in Miami is not good. It was Brady's 7-9 in Miami. For whatever reason, those guys don't play well down here. And I just think that this Miami team, look, they're not good, but they're capable of hanging around. Don't forget, the Vikings are – I mean, the Patriots are coming off a big win. I mean, that matters too. And I think, you know, something that happens down here. He takes his foot off the pedal whenever he gets it. Remember, he gave him a game a couple of years ago and cost him the chance to be the number one seed. I don't understand it. And I know those Miami teams could rush the passer a little better than this one. And that was always a factor. But if you're going to give me more than a touchdown at home, I'm taking it.
Yeah, on the surface, I really wanted to like Miami too, because I know New England struggles in Miami. 1-4 straight up in their last five, also against the spread, 1-4. 8-10 in the Belichick era straight up in Miami. So it's not just a one-year, two-year thing. This is the entire time that that Belichick's been in New England. He has a losing record in Miami. But, and there's a big but, New England is 63-11 in December since 2001. And so this is when we talk about obvious season, you know, and this isn't a case of a team quitting, but this is when New England gets right. They focus, they start looking at January, what they need to do to make the playoffs, to get a better seed. and they win games that they should win. They struggle with turnovers early. Brady has like his worst interception rate, I believe, since 2013. It's at 1.8%, which doesn't seem like a lot, but that's actually a little bit higher than you would think, because if you just look in their last five games, they've given the ball away just once. So they struggle with turnovers lately. They're not giving the ball away at all, and that's how Miami scores their points, is by getting turnovers. They don't, you know, rack up a lot of yards offensively. They don't put together a lot of big drives. They get big plays, they get some big return plays, and then they get a lot of turnovers. New England's a healthier team, and without Xavier Howard, I don't think that those interceptions are going to be easy to come by, especially against a team that's playing well and protecting the ball. So despite the recent history, I think the Pats are relatively safe to put in a teaser and expect them to win the game outright. You know, you getting them down to like 1.5, you know, maybe one if it goes down a little bit more, because I'm pretty sure the sharp money is going to all be on Miami. But I think New England wins this game. I think they avoid the upset that they've had in recent history.
You know what? I totally forgot to mention before to you guys before we started this, so I'm going to float it out there just so you can think about it as we wrap up the podcast. But I got a request for us to do some exotic stuff. Little Pete, they want to hear Pete talk dirty.
Hey now.
But somebody had a request. They're like, could you do a parlay or a teaser and give one out at the end of the show? So if you got one, I'm going to do a money line parlay. So if you got something out there that you want to give out at the end of the show, bear in mind. And I know you've got a teaser, RJ, but I'd be, you know, so whatever you want to do. Pete, you don't have to do one. We'll do it for next week if we need to. I'm sure Costas will be down with that. I like the Dolphins here because it is obvious season, and the Dolphins, quite obviously, have been winning games against the Patriots. They won by 7, they won by 10, and they won by 13, and they won by 4. 4 out of the last 5 games in Miami, 4 out of the last 5 times they played, the Dolphins have won the game. And every year, with the exception of 2014 in that stretch, this has been a late season game, either taking place in the, you know, sometime in December or sometime in January. I mean, they just beat the Patriots with the exception of the 2016 season. And so I'm going to ride the Dolphins here. I think you just take the points at home. It's too many points. I don't mind the idea of putting them in a teaser because I think that the Patriots could easily win the game. But I think for me, you take the Dolphins, to cover here. And it's an easy choice, and I like him as a 2 here.
By the way, since I now live down here, it's the first time in about 5 years that the Patriots haven't displaced me from my room in my hotel.
Oh, which hotel do the Patriots like to stay at, Pete? You can tell the podcast.
No, I'm not going to tell everybody so every fan in the world goes over there. I'm not doing that.
I can tell you that the
congratulations, Pete, for not getting displaced.
I can tell you that the Patriots, the Bills, like to stay at the Westin.
Why would you say that?
What's it going to do? They're not playing the Bills again. Who cares? I was at the Westin when the Bills
played. You don't have the Josh Allen fan club showing up at the Westin.
There were tons of people there in the lobby waiting for the Bills when they played.
Fans always find out where.
Yeah, right.
Pete, you already knew where the Bills stayed, so the Josh Allen fan club also didn't show up anyway.
Also, Pete, what are you going to be like? The Patriots stay at a Marriott. The Patriots stay at a Marriott in Florida. I mean, like, there's like 55 Marriotts in Miami alone. Moving along. Do you remember what this next segment is? They are the
losers!
Yes, I love it. Buffalo, this means we all agree on them. This could be your parlay right here if you want to be, Pete. You take all these teams, package them in a parlay, and fade us. Fade us in the parlay.
Yeah, fade us.
Take the opposite side. We are all taking Buffalo -3 against New York. RJ, the only one with the strong conviction on it, has it as a 3 after you got cold smoked by your Bills the last time they played the Jets.
Yeah, I was against them in that game, but they're playing better now. Josh Allen's running the ball around. I'm still not convinced he's a great quarterback with his arm and accuracy, but man, he's running the ball. He's got like, I think, 234 yards rushing or something like that in his last 2 games. The Jets D's given up 400 plus yards in 3 straight. I don't think Darnold coming back at less than 100% is going to help keep up if they're giving up that many yards. So I think Allen over Darnold at this point, you know, considering their relative health, I think the Buffalo has a better quarterback at this point. I like that we're getting 3 in Buffalo. If it was 3.5, I might stay away. And it was 3.5 for a long time. And for the contest, they gave out 3. And I was like, cool, I'm on Buffalo there because I don't think they lose this game. I don't think they win by less than 3. They have an elite pass defense. Jets are just mediocre or worse all around. So there's actually one thing that the Bills do really well, and the Jets just do a lot of things pretty poorly. So this is pretty easy for me. Buffalo's the better team. And if you can have just laying 3 points with the better team, go ahead and do it.
I'm with you. I think Allen's playing better right now. And defensively, they are tough. But you know what else? They show up every week, and you can't say that about the Jets.
Yeah, good coaching.
Yeah, and Sean McDermott's done a hell of a job. They show up every single week, and I'm going to give him a lot of credit. So I'll take the Bills minus the points.
Are you making fun of Steamboat Sean with that, RJ? You know he likes.
I thought that was a great hire. You know, being a Bills fan, having to deal with Rex Ryan for years, and then they brought him in. I thought it was a great hire. They overperformed last year, made the playoffs when they were more like a 6-7 win team. You know, somewhere around there. So I think he's done a heck of a job. I am going to be the all time Sean McDermott fan in this podcast. I think he's a great coach.
Steamboat Sean likes to make fun of Sean McDermott. Doesn't think he's a very good coach. I think he's a great coach. The quarterback stuff, he could have done a better job with that, but that's fine. Neither here nor there. By the way, if you think the Bills under for the season, you need the Jets to show up here in a big way, because you're probably going to lose that one, though, which is a stinger, because once again, the Bills are outperforming their expectation. Again, coaching. We like Cleveland catching 2.5 at home against Carolina. This is a 3. RJ has it as a 2. Pete has it as a 1. This is for some very simple calculus for me. I am concerned, of course, that the Panthers have to win this game. They have to win this game or else they are toast. However, I don't think that matters in the scheme of things, because I don't think Carolina can win this game. Carolina is terrible on the road, has been terrible all year long, doesn't get up when they play away from Bank of America Stadium. They're on back-to-back road games. They're playing a team that they probably believe they should beat because they are favored. The Browns are underdogs at home, and Cam Newton's hurt. The Panthers' defense isn't playing very well, and when the Panthers' defense does play well, it can hide some of the problems with Cam in the offense. Christian McCaffrey's been great, but Cam's, I mean, look, his accuracy numbers are fine, but he can't throw the ball down the field with any accuracy. And when you see his throws in and around the line of scrimmage, even those are bad. He had 2 touchdown passes that, like, are lucky that they were scores last week. He had 1 throw to Christian McCaffrey on a little like flat route that was well designed play, well run, easy touchdown, but only an easy touchdown because Christian McCaffrey has great hands. The ball was tailing away like a cut fastball from McCaffrey on that play. And then on a slant route to Devin Funchess, you know, he didn't hit him in the numbers. He hit him like Funchess had to dive back up to the right to catch it. I just think that Cam, as strong as he is, as tough as he is, he's not right. His shoulder is messed up. And I'll tell you what, if he doesn't practice Friday, I don't think there's a guarantee. Like, if you like the Browns, put the Browns in now, because I think that there's a chance that ultimately this could completely flip if the Panthers – I don't think they'll sit Cam because they have to win this game, but I think there's a chance that Cam is so hurt that he might not actually be able to play.
Look, this is more – for me, it's more of a play against that Carolina defense. They're awful. I don't care what kind of changes they've made or whatever. They stink. And age has started creeping up on that defensive line. They just aren't the same up there. The back end has issues. I think Mayfield's going to have a big day. I like the Browns in this one.
Yeah, they're 28th against the pass per DVOA, that defense. And Carolina can run on the Cleveland defense, who's just 26th in rush defense. So Carolina, if Brinson is right and they're a little worried about Cam having to air it out with his injury, maybe the game plan is super conservative, do a lot of runs, a lot of short passes, screens, that kind of thing, and don't push the ball downfield. I just don't see how they can be road favorites again. I mean, they just lost to Tampa as road favorites. They lost to Detroit as road favorites. They're on their 4th road game in their last 5, which, you know, the schedule really works against them. And they're 1-5 straight up on the road. So this team that hates going on the road, loses a bunch of games on the road, 4th road game in their last 5. How are you going to make them favorites? See, against a Cleveland team that isn't the Cardinals, isn't the Jets, they're not bottom barrel. You know, they've shown up. They've had some good games this season. So I think we're getting pretty good value here. The line has steamed towards Carolina for some reason. You know, I think it was a pick earlier, -1 earlier, and now it's gone up to 2.5. So I don't know why. I wouldn't feel any confidence betting on this team, just assuming that they're going to get it together because they have to. So yeah, I'm fading them as well. Give me Cleveland.
Listen to these quotes from Cam Newton, and this is on Thursday afternoon, on Wednesday afternoon. He was asked about his shoulder injury, and he said, amongst other things. And the reporter's like, whoa, what? He's like, come on, you know Cleveland is looking at these tapes. And then asked if he needed surgery, Cam said, I can't confirm or deny, which means he's probably going to have off-season shoulder surgery again. And then he said, but at the end of the day, I just know I'm healthy enough to play. I'm not going to let nothing hold me back from being able to help my team. I definitely don't want to be a liability. I just want to make sure that I'm putting myself and this team in the best position to win football games. He said he's confident he'll be ready to go. And Ron Rivera said, we'll see. We're not even at Friday yet. And yes, at some point, they're probably going to have surgery. It's, I mean, like, this is the exact same situation, just reading between the lines, that the Panthers faced during late in the 2016 season when they weren't a good football team. Remember when they went to Oakland and Cam was throwing ducks all over the field and they lost to the Raiders straight up, and it was a game they really needed to win? This is a major red flag to me. It is time to fade Cam Newton and the Panthers down the stretch. They could be a team that gives up if they get down early to Cleveland, and they could really get hammered by the Saints down the stretch, and they could even end up shutting Cam Newton down. So I don't think Carolina's making the playoffs. I think you're going to see them get discouraged. I think Myles Garrett gets a shot on Cam, and I probably should add this as my number four pick, except I was scared by the stinking Browns from last year.
As much time as you just spent on it, you should have put a number four on it.
You're probably right. I probably should have. The Chargers. Yeah, no, sorry about that. The Chargers minus 14 against the Bengals, Pete. We all got them as a two. Explain to me why you like them.
Well, I mean, the Bengals are awful on defense. Phillip Rivers is in a rhythm. He's been fantastic. And I think they're going to get a lead, turn their pass rushers loose. Jeff Driskel will turn the ball over. I hate laying 14 in the NFL, but that's the pick here. It's got to be an easy one.
Yeah, you worry about when you're laying this many points about getting backdoored by a solid offense, you know, getting yards and points in the second half. I don't think that's going to happen against the Chargers defense because Jeff Driskel is bad. Jeff Driskel on the road is even worse. So, yeah, I think it's a pretty safe play.
Yep, same. The only thing I'm worried about with the Chargers, looking ahead to Kansas City. Any concern that they look ahead? They're rolling right now, man. What are the chances they lose this game?
None.
There's a chance. 8%, we'll say. 8%?
They're a pretty safe bet would they be a safe bet in a 12-point teaser?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Just getting that on record. Cardinals plus 2.5 against Detroit. I have the Cardinals as a 3. I'm a little worried because I'm looking at the money on this game and the Cardinals, are getting 40, the Lions are getting 56% of the bets, but 78% of the money, which is always sort of a red flag. I still think though that Arizona, will come to play in this game. They went into Green Bay. They won. Maybe it's a Super Bowl. Maybe there's a little bit of letdown, but Steve Wilks is still coaching for his job. I don't think Matt Patricia is coaching for his job. I don't think Matthew Stafford is playing very well. I think that you can see Chandler Jones get after him. And this Lions defense is susceptible to a guy like David Johnson putting up some big numbers. I think DJ has a big game here. And the Cardinals win this game outright. I like them plus 2.5 easily.
I think the Cardinals win the game outright as well. I think when you look at it and you say, hey, look, they played hard last week. And that surprised me. I'll be honest with you. It surprised me that they played hard, but they did. I think they'll play hard here. This could be one of those spots where the Lions go out there and it's their game to lay an egg. I like Arizona.
This is the game to lay. They lost 5 of their last 6.
Against a bad team.
3 of those have been at home. The only one was against Carolina, who seems to be falling apart. I don't see how Detroit can be road favorites against anyone. I don't care that it's Arizona. The Detroit offense has in the top 230 passing yards since week 8. When you look at the running backs, I like David Johnson and Chase Edmonds over the Blount-Zenner combination at running back. So it turns into a running game. I like Arizona. It turns into a passing game. Detroit really hasn't done that well, and Arizona has a pretty good pass defense. So I don't know why the Detroit's favorite. I think you're getting value going with Arizona here.
All right. I am also on board with that last game. Seattle minus 3.5 against the Vikings on Monday night. A huge game for NFC wild card implications. The Seahawks, of course, cannot win the division. The Vikings can still chase the Bears. I love Seattle here. How about you, RJ?
Vikings are just 1-3 straight up on primetime this year. They beat an overrated Green Bay team. They lost their other 3 games. The Minnesota defense isn't as good on the road. You know, I think I said last week they were giving up 26 points per game on the road, and then they went and they gave up 24 to New England. Seattle stats aren't impressive thanks to that run-heavy game plan, so the overall stats don't look that good, but they're still 5th in pass DVOA and 10th in rush DVOA. So they are efficient passing and running the ball. They're 5-2-1 as home favorites of 4 or less since the start of 2012, so if you make it a close line, Seattle can take care of business with that great home crowd. So 3.5 seems to be a pretty easy pick for me going with Seattle.
All right. I agree 100%. I think the Vikings are playing back-to-back road games on different coasts consecutive weeks is always tough. But Kirk Cousins stinks at prime time. I mean, he's bad. He was awful last week. He's been crappy in prime time most of his career. And he's going to be bad here. And if you give me the better quarterback, and the better quarterback is Russell Wilson, who's playing better, give me the Seahawks minus the points.
Cousins might be the new Stafford, you know, the good against bad teams and bad against good teams, because that's the way he's looked this season, and that could be trouble.
He wishes he was Stafford.
No, have you seen it? Did we not talk about this? Maybe it was Brady Quinn earlier this week talked about this on this very podcast, I believe. I do so many media appearances, like for CBS. I can't even keep up, you know what I mean, Pete? But, somebody pointed out that don't worry about it, that his record against teams with a winning record is like, it's like maybe bottom three, and Stafford's right there with him. He might just be a front runner, and he might not play well in primetime against good teams. And this is primetime against a good team that's smelling blood at home right now.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. That's what my eyes say. So I'm glad the database.
Stafford's never had a defense like this.
Oh, right. Well, yeah, I mean, like, this is not an indictment of Matthew Stafford.
This is a team he should – and granted, his offensive line isn't any good, but he's got a great defense, and he should be able to, you know, capitalize on that. He doesn't. He's not very good.
I also think that Russell Wilson will always get up for games against Kirk Cousins because of that Big Ten championship game back when they played, and Cousins threw that huge Hail Mary to beat Russell and rob him of a potential national championship spot.
I'm sure that's exactly what's going through Russell's mind. On Monday in the locker room, that's what he's going to be thinking.
Yeah, he's going to tell his teammates, you're not going to believe this, guys, but we got to get up for this because Kirk Cousins beat me in the Big Ten championship game.
I don't think he's saying it out loud. I think it's in his head. This guy's chips on the shoulders, Pete. You need to learn to get it.
For the dumbest stuff for motivation. You know that? You really do.
I get motivated to do this podcast. I'm going to bleep Pete up. Top five picks, and then we'll get to these exotics. Rawr. Baltimore +6.5 at Kansas City. That was our, we all like that. That was our best bet. Seattle -3.5 versus Minnesota. The Chargers -14 versus Cincinnati. Cleveland +2.5 versus Carolina. And Arizona versus Detroit +2.5. So we got, two road dogs, and then two favorites and one, dog on the road at Kansas City. I kind of like all those teams we picked to win. I wouldn't mind a money line parlay with those guys. Instead, however, I'm going to give you a high paying, low risk, money line, underdog, parlay of the week. Here's what I got. I went on Sportsbook to get these numbers. Sportsbook.ag, use your favorite book, whatever it is. Give me the Browns +110. We're parlaying four teams. Browns +110, San Francisco 49ers +170, Cardinals +130, and the Chicago Bears +135. All home underdogs, all win outright. You're betting on them to win outright. If you put 25 on it, you win $741. Let's go.
I don't love the San Fran there, but I like the other one. So if you want to be a little more conservative, take San Fran out, parlay the other three. It's got to be what? 10 to 1, at least something like that.
Yeah. So you can put 20. Yeah. So if you want to, I thought about doing that too, but the payout wasn't juicy enough. So I stuck San Fran in there, but I agree with you. San Fran is the least one I like.
Yeah. So that would be a 10% chance happening is what the odds say, but I think you're well north of that. You know, we want to talk about 20-25%, you know, so probably still won't hit. Somebody will screw it up, but I do like all those teams that you mentioned aside from San Francisco. You want to get really crazy though and up your odds, throw Oakland in as a money line parlay. 10.5 point dogs at home against Pittsburgh. I think Pittsburgh has, you know, we said how bad they are against the spread on the road is huge favorite. So they could easily lay an egg there and that would juice your payouts up pretty high.
25 would win you $1,600 if you
put it. There you go.
Good luck with that one. You might as well donate the check. Here's my, already I'm giving you a teaser, 14 teaser.
Okay. Taking
the Cardinals plus the points, the Dolphins plus the points, the Ravens plus the points. And, the Bucks plus the points. That's my 14 teaser.
Okay. So it's, so you get 12 points if you do 14. So you're going to move the Ravens to +18.5. Who else?
You don't have to get 12 points. Can't you do it with six? You can do it with six.
Can you do it with six?
It would bust you, you'd be getting like +150 or +175 or whatever.
16 is a better payout. So
okay.
Six, take Baltimore +12.5, take the Bucks +14, take Arizona +8.5, and you take Miami +13.5.
So okay. Let's just point out that you're teasing against Kansas City, New Orleans, and New England in that teaser.
Yep.
Yeah, one of those are going to trip you up.
That's why it's exotic.
That's why it's a teaser.
Might as well be donating money, blah, blah, blah.
You're getting teased, aren't RJ? Give us your exotic here.
So yeah, in my weekly tips column that comes out on Thursday, I give out a teaser of the week, and it's only a two-team six-pointer. You know, I don't want to get too crazy. I'm still just trying to hit that -110. You know, sometimes -120, depending on what line you're taking. I like teasing the Browns up from 2.5 to 8.5. The Panthers aren't good enough to be blowing out teams, especially on the road the way they've been playing. So getting +8.5 with the Browns, I think, is great value. And then looking at the two road teams, I mentioned the Patriots earlier. I was also looking at the Saints because I think they're going to come out motivated after that loss. I decided to go with the Saints. Tease them down to -2 at the Bucks. They'll win that game by at least 3. They'll get back on track. So Brown Saints, that's my two-team teaser. I am 9-4 on my teaser in the week over the season. So at -110, if you're betting that every week, you get pretty good payout at this point. By the way,
that ain't very exotic, two-team teaser. Not very exotic.
No. The point was this guy who just started betting emailed me, a listener, and was like, hey.
I'm saying, look, we could do two-team teasers. That's not very exotic. I mean, Brinson,
teasers by themselves are exotic. Just the concept of teasers and parlays and all that.
Like, Brinson went out on a ledge. He's ready to fall in.
That's right. I love falling in face first. Boom. All right.
Yeah, my crazy bet of the week, money line, take the Raiders. That's my crazy bet of the week.
It's paying out +480 right now. Just take the Raiders straight up. Then you don't have to worry about the rest of the. You could do a two team money line parlay and take maybe the. I think we all like the Browns. Of course, you could take the Browns and Browns and the Raiders. How about just the Browns and the Raiders?
Do it.
There you go. That's a good bet right there. That'll pay out pretty nicely, I think. Actually, if you bet that, 25 would pay out 279. Browns and Raiders went straight up. You win $300 if you bet $25. Go get that cash. Guys, always a pleasure. We will talk to you next week. And we'll have Nick Costas joining us. How excited are you for that?
Can't wait.
Can't wait.